The death of a well-known member of the Baltimore cycling community saddened, angered, and galvanized riders across the city. 41-year-old Tom Palermo was struck and killed by a vehicle while riding along Roland Avenue. His tragic death heightened concerns about safety for cyclists on Baltimore streets. In Maryland, there are hundreds of crashes involving cyclists each year, some of them fatal. Today, we talk about how to make streets safer with Nate Evans of Bike Maryland and Greg Hinchliffe of Bike More. Plus, we hear from Baltimore City Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark about her efforts to improve conditions for cyclists. Making the city streets better and safer for the growing number of bicycle riders, coming up on midday after the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. Glad you can join us again for our second hour. Dan Roderick's here. Over the holidays, a well-known member of the cycling community, Tom Palermo, was struck and killed while cycling on Roland Avenue in North Baltimore. Tom Palermo was 41 years old. He was a software engineer for Johns Hopkins Hospital. He also designed and built and repaired bicycles, and he was the father of two small children. Since his death, the growing number of bicycle riders in Baltimore City have called for increased safety measures in the city. According to Maryland's 2014 Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan, there are hundreds of bicycle crashes with motorists each year in the state. From 2006 to 2011, more than 4,000 such crashes were reported by the State Highway Administration, and the SHA points out that many such accidents go unreported. About one-fifth, or 22%, of all bicycle crashes statewide in 2011 occurred in Baltimore City. The Motor Vehicle Administration also reports that on average there are 7 cyclist fatalities each year in the state. Today in this hour of midday, we're joined by Nate Evans, Executive Director of Bike Maryland. Nate is also Baltimore's former bicycle and pedestrian planner. He worked with the city from 2008 to 2013, and during that time, the city added more than 160 miles of bike lanes across the city. So, Nate, it's nice to get you back on the show. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you too, Dan.
And Greg Hinchliffe is with us, interim executive director of Bike More here in Baltimore. Greg is a member of the Maryland Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee and the former chair of the mayor's Bicycle Advisory Committee. He's also biked all over the world. He's a retired airline pilot and took his bicycle with him. So he's had a lot of experience cycling in the various capitals of the world. It's nice to meet you, Greg. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Dan.
Nate, let me start with you. The death of Tom Palermo. Could you talk a little bit about the memorial ride that took place the other day, about the atmosphere, about what people are talking about in the wake of Tom Palermo's death?
So I was out riding my bike on that same Saturday like many other cyclists were around town. It was just a beautiful Saturday after Christmas. And I came home and my wife was like, oh, good, it wasn't you. And that's what we get a lot is like, this could really be any one of us. So there was, as details of the accident emerged and everyone became increasingly upset, we did what cyclists do. We go for a bike ride. And so we brought everyone together to kind of remember Tom, put a ghost bike in his honor there on Roland Avenue, and just spend some time reflecting on what his life meant, how he contributed to our cycling community, and just show a support for the family. Because even though we've all missed Tom, there's his family that misses him most.
You knew Tom before this happened.
Yes.
It turns out Tom, as I said, was a builder of bikes, designer of bikes. So he was really into it, and you knew him well.
I didn't know him well, but I met him several times over the course of my tenure working at the city. Tom was the enthusiastic cyclist that was ready to offer his opinion on how we need to make the city better for bikes. Always had a great opinion, and yeah, he was the kind of resource I definitely listened to. Yes.
And Greg, how about you? What are your thoughts about this, and then we'll talk about some of the issues as we move on this hour. But first, about Tom Palermo and this death.
Well, of course, we're all very saddened, and it's a loss, of course, when anyone is lost in any sort of situation, especially a motor vehicle crash. When one of the cyclists is hit, worse yet, killed, everybody thinks, oh, gee, that could have been me. Tom's brother-in-law related how Tom's wife had sent him out that afternoon. "You've been busy. Go out and take a bike ride. Get out of my hair." And those exact words have come out of my wife's mouth as well. We feel especially bad because he was one of us and a bike builder and all that, but it's no less a loss, you know, when anyone is killed in a motor vehicle crash like this.
And, Nate, the location of that particular accident, I think maybe this surprises a lot of people. It's a quiet stretch of Roland Avenue. It looks
quiet.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong, but compared to more congested right. parts of the city where there's more traffic, more pedestrians, more truck traffic or buses, it doesn't seem as busy as other places.
Roland Avenue is one of those roads where cyclists feel a little bit safer on. There's been established bike lanes there for a time. And it's established, so people are kind of used to expecting to see cyclists through that corridor. Part of the parameters that really kind of make Roland Avenue not great for biking is that it's two lanes of traffic and one bike lane against some parked vehicles. When traffic's backed up on the JFX or on Charles Street, people use Roland Avenue to get through that same corridor. So mm-hmm. you're getting these people with the high-speed mentality that are coming down there when it's a residential road. It's a neighborhood road. You've got schools, businesses, community centers along the way, and that's what makes it attractive for people to bike because it's easier to stop and it's scenic. But then at the same time, we don't need that kind of road to be as a speedway through our city.
Greg, what about you? What are your thoughts on that particular aspect of this story, location?
It was surprising. That is considered one of the better places to ride, one because it does have bike lanes, somewhat rudimentary, but it has something, which a lot of our streets have nothing. And it doesn't have as much traffic as some of the other north-south arterials because it does stop there, right at Lake Avenue. Excuse me. But... yeah, I was surprised. That actually is such a calm and beautiful place. Well, I won't say calm. Relatively calm and beautiful place to ride. Serves as part of the interim route of the East Coast Greenway, which is a Maine to Florida a recreational route, and run them right down Roland Avenue through Roland Park.
Just 2 months ago, a colleague of mine at the Baltimore Sun reported, who's a bicyclist, avid bicyclist, reported to me an accident that occurred when he was out with two friends. There were three of them together bicycling. Two of them were hit by a car, and the driver of the car took off, and my colleague took off after the driver and stopped him and brought him back to the scene. But the two gentlemen that he was bicycling with on a fairly quiet street at a fairly quiet time of day, I think, 6:30 in the morning, back in the fall when there was a little bit more light. One went to shock trauma. The other had serious injuries as well. But he was very shook up by this, of course, having witnessed it. And that was the first time I think I actually knew somebody who had been involved in something like that. And then as soon as I told the story to other people, everyone seemed to have a story about a bicycle accident. And a couple of friends of mine, especially severe accidents that I wasn't even aware of until they brought this up. So I guess I'm wondering about, how common is it? We've got some numbers there that I mentioned. I also noted that the State Highway Administration in Maryland says that many accidents like this or collisions go unreported. I don't know why. Why do you, by the way, do you think they make that assumption? I read that in one of their reports, Nate.
I find that it's very common that it's underreported, primarily like a hit and run. They're hit, they run, and the cyclist is left to fend for themselves.
But you can still report that to police, right?
You can still report that if they'll take the report. I heard repeatedly when I was bike planner at the city how someone was hit, there were witnesses to the accident, the car got away, but they got a good description, the police went and tracked them down, no report was taken. No follow-up was ever made. I guess in a city like Baltimore, sometimes we think that there are other crimes that garner more attention, but these are crimes nonetheless, and it affects safety of everyone.
Greg Hinchliffe, I wish you would comment on this for me. Do we have, it seems, from my observations and talking to people like Nate over the years and other bicyclists, a combination of motorist hostility toward bicyclists that's part of the culture and an infrastructure problem? So it seems like those two things combine to make the roads dangerous for people, not only in Baltimore City, but even in suburban areas as well.
Yeah, that's actually it's a nationwide problem. This particular tragedy of Tom's, I don't think, was either one. I don't think there was any hostility on the part of the bishop. And there was at least some rudimentary bicycle accommodation on the road. But it does make for a bad combination. I biked to the show today. Mm-hmm. And I had to come up Calvert Street. I couldn't use my normal bike-friendly routes because they were still covered with snow. So I basically came up Calvert Street. And, you know, there was some hostility and a lot of high-speed traffic ripping by right, you know, 6 inches from my left elbow. It makes for an uncomfortable ride.
Yeah, I know that's a common thing. Nate, I mean, how do you explain that? People just are more annoyed. They're in a hurry. They're impatient. They feel bicyclists slow them down.
All of the above. Yeah. Right. I mean, who can really blame them? We've grown up in an America where we're designed around cars. We have put car access above human access. You look at any kind of planning development, you're going to see a massive parking lot to accompany that, and that's because we encourage people to drive. But I own a car, I drive, but I don't drive every chance I get. We need to start planning our trips accordingly. If we need to go to the store, go to places of worship, why not ride a bike? Why not walk? Consider the other options out there, and I think that a lot of people that are currently driving in us and maybe even hostile will lighten up over that.
Is it clear to you that the bicycle culture in Baltimore City is growing?
Absolutely.
And it's growing because the city has made accommodations for bicyclists, even though, you know, it seems to be at a slow pace to a lot of people.
True.
There are improvements that have been made that should be acknowledged, right? And part of them occurred while you were working with the city as a bicycle planner.
Yeah, I was very proud of the work that I did with the city. I was glad to see it really get more bike-friendly. I'm really proud of the Guilford Avenue Bike Boulevard. It's not perfect, but it shows really what we can do for making quieter residential streets even more accommodating for anyone that wants to try biking. But I think that bike culture was going to grow in Baltimore anyway, just like it has in cities across our country. When I started, it was right at the time of the Great Recession. You saw a lot of people driving less. Gas prices were going up. So people want to save a few bucks, so they took to biking. And we saw 5-6 new bike shops open up across town. Ridership went up. We had the advent of the bike party that has really helped push bike culture in general. And now we have Bike More on board to help support local advocacy efforts for that.
And Greg Hinchliffe from Bike More, I want to go back to that point I made about driver attitudes and infrastructure. So is it a sort of a concession that there isn't much you can do about driver behavior, driver attitudes toward bicyclists, but you can do something about infrastructure to maybe separate the two a little bit more? Is that where we are?
Well, yes, I think that's the most important thing we can do, but it's also the most expensive thing we can do. They mention bike safety advocacy as the three E's of engineering, which is the facilities, the bike lanes, the cycle tracks, the separated paths. Education, which can help with the attitude, and enforcement, which can get some of the people with the bad attitude off the road. Now, I hate to say this, but some of the attitude seems to be at least a little bit justified because there are some real scofflaw cyclists out there who are blasting through red lights and wrong way down one-way streets and endanger themselves and others. And a lot of drivers will say, well, look at that jerk. Why should I give him 3 feet of clearance? He's out there to kill himself anyway. And then they apply that to everybody. Part of a New Year's resolution, but I came here today and stopped at every stop sign and waited for every red light and didn't go wrong way on any one-way street. I'm hoping to help the attitude somewhat. Some people are just going to be mad regardless.
And Nate, is that where you are on this? Is that where planning in general in urban centers is when it comes to bicyclists? There isn't much you can do about the motorist behavior, so you need the infrastructure to separate more the bicyclists from the drivers.
I'd agree with that. I think that we, the more separation you get from motor vehicle traffic, not only the, you're going to see safety increase, but you're also going to see people biking more. That's the kind of infrastructure we need to take our families,
mm-hmm.
kids, and older adults out on those kinds of bike rides.
And then maybe down the road, pardon the pun, is if you see more bicyclists, drivers become more aware that they're there, right?
Exactly. And that's the one factor that is really attributed to every safe cycling town. The more cyclists you have, the fatalities and crashes decrease.
Before we go to our break here, Nate, would you just describe, this is radio, so you have to describe things. Guilford Avenue, the bike, what is that exactly is there that makes that a safer path?
Well, first, it's got a great cutoff for through traffic at North Avenue where the city's headquarters are. So
the city school headquarters.
Correct. Yeah. So cyclists can go through the parking lot and then access a little ramp to continue southbound on Guilford.
Okay.
Or northbound. Motorists have to either stop and go around or use Calvert or Barclay as the through that area. So it's mostly residential, so you don't have a lot of through traffic to begin with. But then we put in some bike-friendly speed humps. So it's got some slots in the middle where cyclists going either way can go. It's also designed so that it won't inhibit emergency vehicles. But your standard cars with a standard wheelbase, they're going to hit one part of that speed hump. So it slows down the cars, but mm-hmm. not the bikes.
Okay. And that's a thoroughfare for bicyclists in Baltimore City, north-south.
Correct. Yeah, right? It goes from Mount Royal Avenue all the way up to University Parkway.
Thank you for describing that. Nate Evans is Executive Director of Bike Maryland. Greg Hinchliffe is with us, too, is Interim Executive Director of Bike More. You can join us here for conversation about bike safety in Baltimore City, 410-662-8780. And not just in Baltimore, anywhere in Maryland that you'd like to talk about this, give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Mary Pat Clark, Baltimore City Councilwoman, will be joining us in just a minute to talk about her work advocating for safer streets for bicyclists. Again, 410-662-8780. Open phone lines. Our midday email address is midday@wypr.org. Welcome back. Dan Roderick's here on Midday. We're talking about bicycle safety occasioned by the death of Tom Palermo. I realize, as I say that, Nate Evans and Greg Hinchliffe probably should do this show from time to time anyway. It's important as more and more people take to bikes, and Baltimore City is trying to adapt. You were part of that, Nate. Greg was an airline pilot and flew around the world, is retired now, so you saw a lot of different cities and how bicyclists experience those cities. So I'm going to talk to you about that during this hour. What do you think of Baltimore? You step back a little bit. Overall, what would you say about the progress for bicyclists in Baltimore?
It's getting better. I just don't think it's getting better quite fast enough. And I'm not sure that we have completely sold everyone in the Department of Transportation on the desirability of improving it. We have neighborhoods that are asking for calmer streets, bike facilities, pedestrian safety. The city council, Councilwoman Clark had brought up a complete streets resolution, which the city council passed, the mayor signed. But since it's not a statute, the Department of Transportation considers it advisory. So I would like to see them get a lot more done. There have been some very strategic improvements. They have the section of the Jones Falls Trail that goes around Harbor Place, united some areas that were bike safe on their own, but you couldn't get from one to the other. You can bike all over Canton very safely. Nice street grid, wide streets. Lots of stops and it's calm traffic.
There's a lack of connectedness. Is that it?
You could do it in Federal Hill or Locust Point, but you couldn't get in between.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped immensely in getting in between. We need more of those links because there are a lot of bad barriers.
Nate, the city has a master plan to deal with some of this, though, right?
They're now working on their second
master plan? Yes. So what is the status of that?
So the first master plan was brought out in 2006. That created the position that I filled for full-time bike planner and then laid out a lot of policy and infrastructure recommendations. And a lot of those we did complete. We did pretty good on it. But then also the original plan called for a five-year update. So 5 years later, we went ahead and started working on the next one, and it looks like it'll be coming down for its final review and completion within a few weeks.
410-662-8780 is the phone number. That's Nate Evans, Executive Director of Bike Maryland, and with me in the studio, Greg Hinchliffe, Interim Executive Director for Bike More here in Baltimore. Let's go to the phone lines and take a couple of calls, and then we'll speak with City Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark. Robin in Dundalk, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi. Sorry, I'm running from my car to my office.
Okay.
I'm part of the bicycle community, and I was at Tom's Memorial Ride, and there I actually saw Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark there, but also was Larry Belsky's widow, who also died because of a driver. And he actually wasn't even on the road. He was off on the shoulder on Butler. He had stopped with another bicyclist. And this woman, she hit him head on and killed him. Well, from behind, killed him and put his buddy in shock trauma for months. And she was never charged.
The driver in that case was never charged. You know about that case, Nate?
Yes, I do. That was Larry Bensky, and his wife Tammy is on our board of directors for Bike Maryland. And we host Larry's Ride to commemorate his honor and to support advocacy efforts across the state. This year it's going to be held on September 12th.
Was Robin accurate in what she said about that?
Yes. Yes, it was accurate.
What about drivers never charged? I mean, I don't know enough about that case to comment on that. Do you? Do you have any further comment about that?
Not on that case in specifically, but I think overall we're looking at maybe our state's attorneys are not as strict as they could be as far as prosecuting cases. Mm. With the current instance, I'm glad to hear nothing right now. I have confidence that the attorneys general at the state's attorney's office will do their job, let them time to investigate the crash.
You mean in the Palermo case?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Mary Pat Clark joining us now, City Councilwoman. Nice to have you with us,
Great
Mary
to
Pat.
Be here. Nice.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah. Happy to be here.
Could you sort of maybe give us an overview of what Nate has done already, some of the city's master plan for bikes in Baltimore City? But what specifically have you been working on? Talk about, I think, the idea of complete streets. People would probably want to know what we even mean by that term.
Well, yeah, let me just say that these two gentlemen, Greg and Nate, are the reason, really, that we in the Baltimore City Council were oriented toward the need for safer bike practices and policies and laws in Baltimore. So Complete Streets is kind of the national model brought down and adopted locally here in Baltimore City, that says, hey, Department of Transportation, Department of Planning, when you plan to construct and to change and to work on roadways, you must take into consideration all users, pedestrians, bicyclists, vehicles, public transit, the disabled, and you must involve groups in the planning for new construction or major reconstruction, and you must report annually to the Baltimore City Council on any time, any instance that you've deferred doing what this street, Complete Streets, requires. It was a mayor and city council resolution, so it's a law in Baltimore City. That it just doesn't amend the code, but it is a law.
Is it citywide or just applied to certain districts? Citywide.
No, it's citywide.
Citywide, okay.
So basically, let me say, there's been changes in the leadership at DOT, but we now have a new director, Mr. Johnson. He's been there for a while now, and we brought DOT into the city council and said, hey, you've never given us a report. So now Mr. Johnson's there, and a report is forthcoming, and then we will be annual after that. Hey, how did you involve people, and what have you done? So we also adopted a bicycle bill of rights. Now, that is a very comprehensive thing, which resolution, but it talks to things like, and I heard you talking earlier, if there is a bicycle accident, the police should take a report. And I heard you talking about that earlier and saying if they take a report. And that's been an issue that we are trying to address through this resolution.
Very interesting. On the engineering part of that, I wanted to ask Greg Hinchliffe about this. This is very interesting. It sounds like we're talking about the accommodation for bike lanes, for instance, takes up space that had been reserved for cars in the past, right? Are we talking about trying to imagine and trying to envision what this looks like? One lane instead of two, or more narrow lanes for the vehicles and a wider lane for the bicycle? Is that what we're...
All of the above, actually. There are places where we can cut the through traffic lanes from two lanes down to one because the neighborhood traffic just does not need the two lanes, and the two lanes just serve for...
We've done it, Mary Pat.
We've done it in the 800 block of West University Parkway. And we did it for the bicycles, but we did it to protect the people who live there who had such fast traffic going by that they couldn't even open their car doors to get out in front of their own houses.
So they appreciated
it. Oh, no, it was a traffic calming wonder. So they park next to the curb. You have the bike lane next to them.
Yeah.
And then you have not two lanes of traffic anymore, but just one.
Right. You just got to watch out when you open your car door.
Well, that's right? What they had to watch out for, and that's what the bike lane helped buffer.
Right. But, I mean, if you're...
So you don't hurt the bike.
You're a bicyclist.
Because that's a
frequent
accident.
Stories I heard was from about a young woman who was going down the bike lane, and someone just opened their car door to get the groceries out, and, that happened.
That's called dooring.
You're
required by law to check before opening your door. But sometimes the bike lanes are a freebie. The lanes on the street are 12 feet wide, and that's a freeway width, and it encourages freeway speeds. No matter what that sign says on the post, it can say 25 miles an hour, but if you stripe the lanes at 12 feet wide, the people are going to drive 45.
And, Nate, is there a different way to park cars that are more conducive to bike-safe streets?
Reverse angle parking is better.
Reverse angle parking.
Than pulling straight in.
So that's reverse angle parking. That's what we see in Hamden, for instance, on the avenue, right? So that's better.
It is, except when it takes out bike routes. So, like, there was some reverse angle parking that was put in Canton that eliminated a pre-established bike route on Fayette Avenue. So now there needs to be a bike detour for those few blocks. But I think you also need to look at what kind of culture you want to promote in Baltimore. Do you want to make it so we can get more parking in, or do and typical length of a car is wider than a Canton row home? Or do we want to make it a city where everybody can bike around and not have to get a car, establish a reliable transit system that people can use, and not just keep it so that we're sheltering ourselves in our cars?
Well, the other thing is that Baltimore, we talk about attracting 10,000 new families by 2020. Mm-hmm. Transportation is one of the major, major issues for young people, especially graduating from local colleges and universities who have come here to be educated, and we'd like them to stay. And one of the issues that, when polled, that they talk about is transportation. And until we get ourselves with mass transit that is efficient and effective, bikes are a great alternative if we design the city around them. And I think it's important for the future of the city and the repopulation that we talk about to have safe, secure, consistent bike lanes.
Here's an email from Michelle, who says, I was in Finland this past summer, and while in Helsinki, I saw many families out biking. What I noticed was that instead of bike lanes being part of the road where cars travel, the bike lanes are part of the sidewalk where pedestrians walk. I think we have an infrastructure problem, and I feel bikes should not be on the same road as cars. It is too dangerous. Not to say there won't be accidents between bikers, runners, and pedestrians. However, the risks are less. You wouldn't expect walkers to share the roads with cars. Many accidents would be avoided if we change the way we design our bike and running lanes. So Michelle says, put them closer to the sidewalk or make them part of the sidewalk. Greg Hinsliff, you've been around the world. You've seen this. I don't know if you've been to Helsinki.
I have been to Helsinki. Okay. It's one of my favorite cities, but that is a fairly common European treatment. It's called a protected bike lane. Often they will put the bike lane behind the parked cars against the sidewalk rather than between the parked cars and the high-speed traffic. Mm. You can also build a similar facility called a cycle track that may not involve the parked cars, but it is a better facility in the middle of the block. You have to be careful at the ends of the block because you can have some intersection conflicts that are actually a little worse. But we don't have the real estate and we don't have the money to do that everywhere. There are places, your first mile of your ride and your last mile of your ride, then you're going to be on a street.
Right, right. So, Nate, it becomes problematic. I guess you can't take one model and apply it to every city neighborhood.
That's right. But you can look at the context of each road and see how it's surrounded, whether it's businesses, residential areas, what kind of amenities you have along that stretch, and then you can plan accordingly. So we are looking at doing a cycle track on Maryland Avenue that'll go from 29th Street all the way down to the Inner Harbor. And what that'll do is that'll provide the separated bike facility, separated from moving traffic by a row of parked cars. And that'll make a safe facility for everybody to use that'll connect Charles Village all the way down to the Inner Harbor.
Mary Pat, I assume that you get the pushback from people who say we're still a car-dominated culture. We have all these commuters in the city. People say they want to walk and bike more, but there's still all these cars. So we can only do so much as far as accommodating bicycles. Do you get that, or
I don't hear that,
well,
but
good.
I know that. Yeah. I mean, I know that we need to better promote. As a city, I think that we and we've done a lot as a city, to engineering wise and planning wise. We now need to get on public radio, etc. Talk about it and say why it's important. So, I mean, for example, there's a state law that's a couple years old now that says that when someone steps into an unsignalized crosswalk in Maryland. Traffic stops. But it's not that, and nobody really understands whether that's the case or not. We got to promote the heck out of it. My daughter lives in California. I said, how come in California, the minute they look like they're going to cross the street, everything stops? She said, because they enforced the heck out of it. And when they did, we learned the lesson.
Mary Pat Clark from the Baltimore City Council joining us. Greg Hinsliff from Bike More and Nate Evans from Bike Maryland. 410-662-8780. We'll take a short break. We'll come back and take some phone calls from our listeners, and I'll read some emails. We'll be right back. Here's an email from Joe, who says he's a 15-year commuter to downtown Baltimore along Roland Avenue. A 30-year cyclist. He says there's a power imbalance between bikes and cars. It creates a lot of hostility. I've had glass bottles thrown at me and obscenities yelled at me. Cyclists are moving targets to angry people behind the wheels of cars. It's going to take a critical mass in the number of people riding bikes on the streets to get drivers' behavior to change for the better. We're getting there, but it's still a long way off. If you have a comment you want to share by email, that address, midday@wypr.org. I promised our listeners we get to them. And let's go back to the phone lines. Doug in Reservoir Hill, thanks for calling Midday.
Well, thank you all. It's very informative. I had an observation, then a question. One observation, I was coming down St. Paul Street from 28th, 29th Street, proceeding into the city. And it's clearly a bike lane, which takes up the two lanes of St. Paul Street. The bicycle was, he was in his mid-50s, chose to be on the left side, not in the bicycle lane. And being understanding, I said to him, I rolled down my window politely, said, there's a bicycle lane over to the right. He kind of like sarcastically said, oh, really? And proceeded all the way down 28th Street through 25th Street, all the way down to North Avenue. And he's like in his 50s. Is there any... does he break a law by not using a bicycle lane?
No.
He's not actually breaking a law?
No, he's not.
Okay.
Not in Baltimore.
But he should be over in the lane? Where is that?
Are you saying he is?
Greg?
We managed to change the law years ago that it's no longer mandatory to use the shoulder. However, the state of Maryland does still have a law, one unpopular with cyclists, that requires use of a bike lane if it is in reasonable. Well, actually, it doesn't even say if it's in reasonable shape. Some cyclists don't like that St. Paul Street bike lane. It's on the narrow side. They're afraid of doors. And the reason that some people will ride on the left on a one-way street, which is allowed if there isn't a bike lane, is that they're less likely to have a door pop open. That's usually the driver's door that does
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right. That would be the passenger side. Right. Okay.
Mm. Well, I stand corrected. Of course, it's a state law, so.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes, you know, it's not a city.
Okay. John says, Johnny writing in says, enforce cell phone and texting laws. So many car drivers on their phones are texting. If they got the tickets they deserved, it would cut down on accidents in general.
Amen.
Yep. Here's Alex in Baltimore City. You're on Midday Next. Welcome to our show.
Hey, yeah. Thanks so much for taking my call. I just kind of wanted to explain a little bit why bikers who do seem to blow through red lights or stop signs do so. And I think a lot of it is more a symptom of issues with biking infrastructure rather than a cause of hostility between bikers and cars. Those are really defensive measures that bikers take as a way of avoiding coming into consistent traffic with cars. So, you know, oftentimes getting ahead of traffic makes a lot more sense than riding along with it when cars are so aggressive and hostile and liable to clip you as they pass you. So part of the reason that people do that is to make riding bikes safer in the city. And obviously a really easy way, although expensive, of fixing that issue overall and reducing hostility is just having dedicated bike lanes. There seem to be twin tensions in the U.S. of whether we want bikers to be like cars or bikers to be like pedestrians. And if we're going to treat them like cars, then we need an infrastructure that that manages them appropriately. And if we're going to treat them like pedestrians, we need cars to also make sure that they don't hit them. So.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for your comments. Greg?
Well, actually, one of the great beauties of traveling by bicycle is it can be both. You can be a car and make some pretty good time out on the road, and then when it comes down to it, you can dismount, or if the city permits it, you can actually ride on the sidewalk and be a pedestrian. You can wait at the crosswalks, and you can take that bike right up to and maybe inside your place of employment or wherever it is you're going. But you're right, there's even within the cycling community, there's a group called Vehicular Cycling that doesn't like bike lanes or any of these facilities because it makes them feel like second-class citizens, and by God, I have a right to the road, and I'll be out there in the middle of it.
Greg, where were you most comfortable as a bicyclist, and speaking of a city, one of the cities of the world, and why?
Well, Amsterdam, I think, is every cyclist that has traveled internationally's favorite city. The infrastructure is amazing. There are paths that go everywhere. You never have to deal with on-ramps and off-ramps from a freeway or something because there's a path around it. There are so many cyclists that the people all look out for them. The only thing the cyclists seem to yield to, they do follow the laws and stop for red lights and all that, but the only thing that will scatter the cyclists are the trams. They seem to rule over everything.
Mm. But you have a critical mass of
there is
of,
exactly
a lot that. Of bicyclists.
There are so
right?
many cyclists, and it's everybody from families with little kids in something they call a Bockfiets, which has a box on the front of the bike, which is full of groceries or even toddlers. Little old ladies in lace gloves going to tea on a bicycle. It's amazing how the bicycle has infiltrated the culture.
When you look at the national picture in this country, it seems to me that this is a big deal with cities getting young people to live, as you were saying before, Mary Pat,
yeah.
Become educated and then stay in those cities.
When I'm fighting for bikes, I'm fighting for Baltimore City, for the future, and the bright young people to come here and stay here and not move away so that, you know, we can rebuild the city. It's all about people and a talented pool for employment.
Nate?
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting to see how a lot of U.S. mayors are competing with each other. Just a couple years ago, Rahm Emanuel from Chicago was threatening Mike McGinn at Seattle, saying, we're going to take your tech jobs and your cyclists to go with them. And he came right back, no, we're keeping both. And I think anywhere you see across the U.S., in any city that's bikeable, it's through the leadership of a mayor. I mean, you look at New York City and Mayor Bloomberg had Jeanette Sadik Khan come in, the Department of Transportation, and transform that city into a bike-friendly city in just a couple of years.
And we can do the same, and I think that we have the right leadership to do so. I'm just sorry that Nate's not with us anymore, but he's still in Maryland.
I am.
Yep. Bike Maryland, Nate Evans and Greg Hinchcliffe, who is interim executive director of Bike More, Mary Pat Clark, Baltimore City Council, with us in the studio. And Kathleen's on the phone for us. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad Mary Pat Clark is here because she's going to understand this comment. First of all, let me say I'm very sorry about the death of Thomas Palermo. And what concerns me is this is not the first, but it is the second death between University Parkway and Roland Avenue in the past 2 years. And what concerns me as a motorist is that I live along Tudor Arms Avenue, which is right below Johns Hopkins Lacrosse Field. And the street is narrow, winding, and has parking on both sides for the first half. Regularly, when Hopkins is in session, I bet at least 50 to 100 bikers ride, it's a one-way street, the wrong way on that street from the Hamden area into University Parkway. And I even watched one night when the police were waiting for some other reason at the end there by University Parkway. It is a life-threatening head injury or a fatality waiting for a place to happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for your comment.
I didn't know about
all right.
that.
Mary Beth's taking notes,
I know Tudor Arms
Kathleen.
Very,
yeah.
very well.
Yeah.
But I did not know about this, and I will get involved with it. Thank you, Kathleen.
Well, this scofflaw behavior by cyclists is one of the things I mentioned earlier about making motorists and even residents mad. I'd like to say two things. That one, that neither of these two facilities, Tom Palermo or Nathan Krasnoppler, the other one to which she's referring, on University Parkway, was a case of cyclist misbehavior. These were people doing everything right, riding helmeted and in a bike lane,
lanes.
And were essentially run down. But the other thing is, throughout Europe, they have what they call counterflow bike travel. In Amsterdam, for example, there's a sign at the beginning of about every one-way street that says, do not enter, in Dutch, of course. But then below that, it says, accept bicycles. And they will allow the bicycles to go the wrong way if it's a wide enough and a slow enough street. Sometimes they'll put down a stripe or even a barrier to separate them from the cars. But they allow the cyclists to go both directions. Obviously, you shouldn't do it
at high speed.
This is not the place to do that on a narrow road. If you want to survive the experience.
Right. Let me read an email from Claudia, who says she rode in the memorial for Tom Palermo and was very moved to be a part of it. For those of us who are casual commuters and not avid cyclists, she writes, what tips would you recommend to us to improve our safety? For example, at the memorial ride, I spoke with a gentleman who has been biking for 30 years, told me that I should own the road and force cars to slow down behind me on residential streets as opposed to riding on the side of the road where there's no dedicated bike lane. I also heard that blinking lights aren't a good idea, which was news to me. Any advice on those two points? Nate.
So Bike Maryland, we do educate the public on safe cycling practices. We offer bike commuter workshops and everyday biking workshops. So even if you don't want to make the bike to your office or your place of work, then you do it for getting groceries, running errands. And we can definitely help out with that. If you'd like to contact our new education coordinator, Brian Kopp, brian@bikemd.org. We can set you up with some educational material and come out and do a workshop for you.
Greg, any comment on that?
I would say choose your route carefully. A lot of people, when they start commuting by bike, for whatever reason, for health, for the scenic beauty of it, they'll get on the bike and go the same way they used to go in the car, and that's not necessarily the right way. For a bike, you can often find a parallel street maybe a couple blocks away. That's a much better cycling route. and Bike More and the Baltimore Bike Map can serve as references, and just your cycling friends. The technique that was discussed is called taking the lane, and that's basically discouraging the traffic behind you from trying to squeeze by. We have that 3-foot minimum passing distance law. Not everybody pays attention to it. I'm not sure everybody knows about it. But if you take the middle of the lane, they're less likely to try to squeeze into a 12-foot lane with you and give you inadequate
clearance. So advise the drivers among us about that when that happens.
That if you'll see that 14 feet is considered, I think, the minimum for safe side-by-side riding with a car.
I mean,
and
14
bike.
Feet.
14 feet in width.
Width, right.
Of the lane.
Right.
So if a lane is 14 feet wide, sometimes you'll see a bike lane put on it. Sometimes you'll see the pavement devices called sharrows, which stands for share the road arrows. But,
right. Seen those?
And, yeah, the cyclists can ride, you know, safely out from the doors of the parked cars, and the motorists can safely pass them, and everything is
okay.
fine.
If you're not in a spot like that, though.
If you're in a narrower lane, the motorist, by law, is required to wait for a safe spot to pass and give at least 3 feet of clearance when doing so. And the technique that's used there is to force the motorist to do that, or at least encourage them to do that, rather than squeezing in by the cars and having the motorists try to squeeze by.
Mary on Twitter wonders, can it be fair to say that drivers lack knowledge of the biking rules?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
And that's
why I asked you that question,
yes.
Greg.
That's our responsibility here yeah. in Baltimore City and Bike More and the advocates, but mostly the city of Baltimore. And I think that it would be good for us to really get out there and like that crosswalk thing makes me crazy.
What's that?
Well,
you have to stop when there's a pedestrian in an unsignaled intersection.
Unsignaled crosswalk.
Right.
But people don't know, so you can stop and somebody's going to plow into the back of you.
Right, yeah.
Or worse, you stop, but the outside traffic doesn't, and someone starts to cross and they can get hit.
John in Towson, we're short of time, but I'd like to get your comments on the show. Go right ahead, John.
Sure, real quick, I'm an avid cyclist, and I was actually with the group where your colleague chased down the cyclist. And you know, one of the things that I've noticed, and we've all noticed, is that if a driver leaves the scene, in other words, hit and run, the penalties are taken more seriously. Okay, if I've noticed that if a driver hits somebody and stays, it's usually, you know, it's a cyclist's fault. It's $500, $1,000. I think the law says it's a $1,000 fine. And quite frankly, I think that the penalties for drivers who cause accidents, and whether it's injury or death, they need to be more severe. It needs to be treated as a homicide. I mean, and that's clearly what this was. With this cyclist.
You know what I want to say, John? We are short of time, but I don't want to get into it. Criminal charges or anything like that on the air today. But I does say, your call does make me want to say to the Baltimore Sun, my editors and fellow reporters, we ought to do some reporting on this. We ought to get some data together to see how the police behave in situations like this, in cyclist accidents, how state's attorneys respond, and if the cases get to court, how they are adjudicated. I think there's some journalism to be done there. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, John. And thanks to Greg Hinchcliffe, interim executive director of Bike More here in Baltimore. Thank you for being. It's bikemore.org, right?
Yes.
Your website.
.net.
.net. Okay. Thank you, Greg, for being here. Nate Evans, same to you. Thank you for joining us again.
Thanks, Dan.
Nate is from Bike Maryland. And Baltimore City Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Pleasure.
Thank you for your
Thanks.
Work. Yeah, thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That's our midday for today. If you have more comments about biking, bike safety, send them to me by email. I'll read them on Friday. We have time on the Friday show to catch up on letters. And I'll see you again tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producer is Michael Hemowitz. Our interns are Carrie DeSantis, David Richman, and Marjorie Goodman. Midday's engineers are Matt Taka and Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.